the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
John Gibbons with us for our weekly last word in the environment. He's turned travel writer as well for the Irish Times today, writing about a trip to Costa Rica over on the other side of the world. I'll ask John about that in a moment, because John, I want to start with your opinion as to the latest outbreak of war in the Middle East, what this says about our dependence on imported fossil fuels, given what's happening with prices now of home heating oil, petrol, diesel.
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I suppose the first thing to say is there was a look-back study completed in the last few days, and it estimated that the Ukraine war between 2022 and 25 in increased energy bills cost the European Union $1.8 trillion in additional energy costs. So it delivered a massive energy shock to the European Union. Of course, many of your listeners will have felt that very directly in the bills. Now, what we're seeing essentially is we're now facing into yet another major energy shock, of course, with the Iran war. And given the capricious nature of the US administration, who's to say how many more wars we can expect in the next couple of years. And all of this, Matt, really is a red flag to say we have got to make a permanent, decisive break from fossil fuels. These imported fossil fuels coming from some of the most odious regimes in the world, they've essentially got us in an energy trap. And in Ireland, while we've done quite well in terms of deploying renewables for electricity production, the fact remains that Ireland, about 80% of our total energy needs, Matt, are still met by imported fossil fuels. So our transport sector, for example, our home heating sector is still heavily dependent on liquid fuels. We have got to get these out of the system as quickly as possible.
Okay.
And this isn't a green issue, Matt. This is an energy security issue. And I would hope the government would approach it in that way.
Yeah, but there's a couple of things I have to say to you about that. The first is that one of the reasons why Europe overall was so vulnerable to what happened when Russia invaded Ukraine is because of moving away from nuclear power under pressure from many environmentalists back after the disaster in Japan, how many years ago it was now. But if Germany and others hadn't moved away from nuclear power, Europe would not have been as vulnerable and would not have had that enormous bill. Now, you can't really say in Ireland's case that we moved away from nuclear because we didn't have any in the first place. But then the second thing is, and while I might take your point that we need more wind power and we need no solar power, the slowness of the delivery would suggest we could have done with having an LNG terminal in Shannon, the one that has been nixed over the years, because in a crisis, that would give you enough gas to last for 30 days. Now, the crisis might last for more than 30 days, but it sure as hell would help. And given that we knew what happened to us in 2022, has it not been negligent on the part of the state to not have put an LNG terminal in place to provide for security of supply in the event of something like this happening?
Well, I suppose that I might argue, Matt, that committing ourselves to LNG, which in this case means LNG imports from the US, is really going from the frying pan into the fire. Because as we've seen now, the US is at least as unreliable an energy source as anything to the east of us. And to your point,
sorry, John, I disagree with that. The Americans under the Trump administration will sell it to us, because if there's money involved, they'll supply it.
Well, let me clarify, Matt. The Americans are deploying LNG as a weapon of diplomacy. They're using it essentially to hold Europe to ransom. And they've made it absolutely clear that by they're trying to force Europe to buy more and more American LNG, which of course in turn places Europe at the mercy of the US in the same way, Matt, that Europe was tactically and strategically at the mercy of Russian gas imports, which was a huge mistake. And I think Europe has understood that. To your point about nuclear, yeah, clearly the Germans made a huge mistake after 2011.
And Fukushima was March 2011,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. They phased it out under Angela Merkel, which was a catastrophic error. The French, for example, haven't followed down that particular rabbit hole. Across the rest of Europe, nuclear isn't a decisive part of the mix. In America, for example, about a fifth of the energy production is from nuclear, so it hasn't gone away. But nuclear isn't going to fix European energy issues in the short term. What we need is an absolutely decisive, a Marshall Plan scale pivot to renewable energy, backed up with massive battery and other forms of storage to capture that energy.
Yeah, but that can't be done overnight. And that's why I brought up the LNG thing. And LNG doesn't just come from the United States. You could have got it from Qatar. We could have had storage in place now, which would help alleviate what could be coming down the road for us. And, you know, maybe we should also have accelerated getting these offshore wind farms in place and the rest of it. But the reality is that we didn't. And you can't move away from using fossil fuel supplies if you haven't put the replacements in place.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously remains a challenge and will continue to be a challenge. But the issue really is, as long as we keep investing in fossil fuel resources, we're essentially stuck in that loop. And to your point, Matt, about LNG, it is not a quick and easy fix to build, commission an LNG terminal. These are huge mega projects that naturally and correctly, by the way, have to go through extensive planning. We can't rush them through because rushed LNG plants have a habit of exploding. So we don't want that. But I would come back to my earlier point that I think it would be a strategic error for Ireland to double down on energy dependence from unreliable suppliers. Okay. And the US is now top of that list of unreliable suppliers. And that's long-term, Matt. This will persist long after the current incumbent has left office.
John, I mentioned at the outset, you've been to Costa Rica recently. Costa Rica, how do you get to Costa Rica? You'd hardly went in a fishing boat.
Yeah, in an upturned canoe, Matt. That's right. Yeah, of course I flew to Costa Rica. So I've written about it, as you said, in the Irish Times Science and Climate page today. I suppose I'd first written about Costa Rica all the way back in 2010. And I'd long, like many other people with an environmental eye, I'd long admired the work that's been done in Costa Rica in terms of biodiversity protection and nature restoration, particularly, Matt, because they came from such a poor place. If you go back 50 years, Costa Rica was one of the most deforested countries in the entire tropics, and essentially strong political leadership. They've turned it around. They have reforested huge areas of their country. A quarter of Costa Rica is now proper national forest, as opposed to we have less than 2% of Ireland is national forest. And they've also built out a huge tourism industry off the back of this, worth about $4 billion a year. And over 500,000 Costa Ricans are involved in tourism, the great bulk of which is ecotourism. And that have obviously included myself as somebody there as an ecotourist. So yes, getting to Costa Rica from Ireland is a challenge. I addressed that in the article. I did a calculation, Matt, that my return trip in all likelihood accounted for about 5 to 6 tons of CO2, which would be round about half an Irish person's typical emissions per annum. And I was making the point that usually if I were to go to one of these carbon offsetting sites, they might be suggesting that I pay about €30 a ton in offsetting, but I don't accept the maths on that. I think they're incorrect. So the way I resolved it, I mean, it's unsatisfactory, of course, but the way I resolved it was to instead take a much higher estimate of CO2 damage at about €160 a ton, which would means that my flight probably contributed about €1,000 in carbon damage. And so what I've done, rather than paying it into one of these dodgy airline-run CO2 schemes, I've made a direct voluntary contribution to a Costa Rican-based charity supporting environmental work on the ground in the country as the best I could do. But as I say, it's very difficult to get to Costa Rica without travelling to Costa Rica.
Well, this does raise an interesting point, though, John, in that clearly, as you've outlined, Costa Ricans depend on the revenue from tourism to invest in the things that they want to do to make it a better country. But at the same time, everybody going to Costa Rica is generating tons of carbon. So how do you manage? How does everybody manage? You might be putting all of the money into because of your conscience in relation to making a contribution for the tonnage that you have worked up. But I'd imagine many of the other tourists going there don't. But is that a worthwhile trade-off for Costa Rica to get much-needed tourism income?
Yeah, it's a dilemma, Matt. For example, without that tourist income, there is no question that Costa Rica would have been laid waste. It would have been logged and been turned into farms, because without a revenue source, essentially, rainforests are very difficult to protect. They're going to come under pressure, under economic pressure. So by developing an ecotourist industry, which, as you say, has the very, very distinct downside of being involved in aviation and so on, the trade-off is that they have developed this. I guess there are many trees, let's say, now standing in Costa Rica today, many, many rich biodiversity there that only exist by dint of ecotourism. So it is a crude offset, if you like. But to tell you how valuable Costa Rica is, Matt, it's a tiny little country. It only occupies about 0.03% of the land area of the world, but it has 6% of the total global biodiversity, over 500,000 discrete species. Now, however you calculate that, these are absolutely precious species, many of which only occur there. And without ecotourism, unfortunately, many of these species would simply cease to exist. So it's one of those many dilemmas that we face. Now, you know, if we have to make trade-offs, and we do have to make difficult trade-offs, I personally think that tourism to Costa Rica, it has its environmental costs, but it has its massive ecological benefits. And of course, those standing forests in turn pull down large amounts of carbon. So they, in a sense, are doing some of the offsetting work for us. But it's, as ever, Matt, it's an uneasy compromise. I wish I could tell you that I was able to manage that trip in an upturned canoe, but that's not, unfortunately, how the real world works. And as you know, Matt, and we've discussed this on many occasions in this program, my personal preference is to have a rationing system for air travel, so that anybody, myself included, that we get a certain allowance for free, and after that we pay escalating carbon charges to truly reflect the cost of that ticket. So the voluntary contribution that I've decided to make, that really should, that's probably close to the type of costs of long haul tickets should be as a carbon cost. But of course, getting that agreement would require international treaties. And as you know, especially in the current climate, international treaties are very difficult to secure.
Very briefly, John, we know that MAGA hates wind energy and that Donald Trump hates wind turbines. But are you suddenly hopeful that MAGA might love solar power?
Yeah, MAGA's had a little bit of a U-turn on this, Matt, but rest assured, this has nothing to do with climate. In fact, the only reason why so many MAGA heads, the kind of people we're talking about here, are Newt Gingrich, Kellyanne Conway, Katie Miller, they've come around to the joys of solar because there's a massive shortfall of electrical energy in the US to power their burgeoning data center industry. So they're finding they can't commission coal plants, they can't get oil plants on fast enough, or even gas plants fast enough. As I mentioned earlier, the thing about these fossil fuel plants is they take years to actually deploy, whereas solar, you can deploy a solar farm in a matter of months. So this is your quick and easy way to do it. And I suppose, let's say that they're ever the practical ones, they've decided to bite their lip on the wretched renewable energy because it's allowing them, rapidly deploying solar is giving them the additional juice to power up all these AI farms they want to keep running.
John Gibbons, thank you.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.